I'm going to hazard a guess that most of us probably respond more favorably to invitations than to commands. Even if we are persons who like to know what's expected of us, we don't like feeling called out or put on the spot. That said, some situations call for a more straightforward approach. When we face a difficult medical diagnosis, we want our physician to be direct and precise and to give us workable options. In the midst of a crisis, we need clear guidance more than a soft touch. In today's text, God, through the prophet Isaiah, is bringing a covenant lawsuit against Jerusalem. And the urgency in God's presentation causes the words practically to tear free from the page. God, for most of this text, is certainly speaking in all caps and using bold print. The kingdom of Judah has faced an imminent threat from the Assyrian Empire. There have been incursions by the Assyrians into Judah's territory, but the capital city of Jerusalem is never taken. This narrowly averted disaster, though, has opened a window into some deeper issues endemic to the life of Jerusalem, especially among those of its citizens who are wealthy and socially and politically connected. These endemic issues lead God to bring suit against the people, alleging covenant infidelity in urgent, direct, unmistakable language. Witnesses are called in verse 2, the heavens and the earth. Then God commences to bring the case, and it's a harsh litany of a covenant forsaken, of festering wounds in the social and spiritual fabric, of evil and corruption practiced as social policy. God's case is devastating. By the time our lesson for today begins in verse 10, God argues that even the people's worship is corrupt. And God, in disgust, repudiates all of it. The sacrifices, the festivals, the Sabbath observances, God disavows the lot. The upshot can be seen clearly in God's statement in verse 15. When you stretch out your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Even though you make many prayers, I will not listen. Your hands are full of blood. The summation of this covenant lawsuit is stark. God tells the people that there's blood on their hands, meaning that others have quite literally paid for their corruption and injustice. One commentator summarizes God's position like this: Yahweh is rejecting these gestures of worship because they are no longer vehicles for a serious relationship. The offerings are dishonest. Yahweh will no longer participate in the charade of receiving gifts from people who are not sincere. It's not a particular religious practices or set of practices that Yahweh rejects. It is instead every effort at communion that is rooted in pretense, dishonesty, and disobedience. And yet, even in this dire situation where the people of Jerusalem, particularly those numbered among the haves in social, political, and economic capital, have made an absolute mockery of their acts of worship in God's eyes, even in that instance, a glimmer of hope remains. To change metaphors from law to medicine, the diagnosis is grim, and the symptoms are overwhelming. But God offers a course of treatment. In verses 16 and 17, God prescribes a two-pronged therapeutic intervention. First, in verse 16 and the first line of verse 17, there's a focus on the basics of relationship with God. Cease to do evil, learn to do good. This would serve to reestablish the acceptability of the people's worship and serve as a reset for honest relationship with Yahweh. Now, this probably, or at least to me, sounds a little overly simplistic. But maybe the very simplicity of it, cease doing evil, learn to do good, perhaps that simplicity reflects just how warped perceptions had become among the Jerusalem elite. So warped that people had lost their covenant moral sensibilities. So in this first round of treatment, God calls for a return to basics, learning again how to distinguish good from evil, and perhaps also learning to see how often the latter is cynically justified and willfully mislabeled as the former. The second focus of God's prescribed treatment begins with the second line of verse 17, and it deals with establishing just social relationships. God calls for renewed social practices and policies in which the needs of the weak and the vulnerable, those most prone to being overlooked, underrepresented, and subject to political exclusion and economic exploitation, so that all of those are attended to. This second set of imperatives is meant to address how the citizenry of Jerusalem relates in very, very practical terms with those of their number who are least connected and most vulnerable. No longer can God tolerate rampant corruption masquerading as acceptable social policy. The treatment of the least influential and most vulnerable becomes the yardstick by which God's people are measured. Our text closes with God's call for a decision from the people. Will the terms of God's suit be honored? Will the prescribed course of treatment be followed? The choice is laid out in terms that are too stark to mistake. Following the course of Yahweh is the way of life. Ignoring it is the way of death. I suppose that for many of us, and certainly myself included, the severity of the language of lawsuit that Isaiah uses in today's lesson is a little uncomfortable. We're unsettled to hear God's anger portrayed so openly and starkly, and we're troubled by the piercing directness with which God points to corruption among God's people. Today's text shows us just how intertwined our practical lives in the world and our lives before God really are. As a matter of fact, despite our tendency to silo and sort the different parts of our lives into different categories, our life in the world is our life before God. Full stop. How we engage with our food vulnerable neighbors, our neighbors without adequate medical care, our neighbors who are economically and socially vulnerable, can't be separated from our worship of God. This is equally true of our individual lives and our life as a community. Love of God and love of neighbor, as Jesus taught, are connected all the way down. Of course, there are complexities. We will disagree on the how of practical neighbor love. We will argue about social policies and goals and priorities. But a good faith argument is better than the kind of willful blindness God's suit against Jerusalem alleges. Just as God called the Jerusalem community to do, we can dedicate ourselves to learning to see, to learning to see again, learning to distinguish good from evil. We can dedicate ourselves individually and communally to seeing those of our neighbors that too often drop from view, from the view of social policy and the view of our own individual attention. We can notice when the benefits of some, perhaps even ourselves, come at the expense of others. We can learn to see those of our neighbors that go unnoticed and uncounted. And as God directs in the text, we can act. We can offer a meal to persons needing a meal. We can support efforts to reach children whose lives have been invaded by addiction. We can partner with others in our community through organizations like Christian Clearinghouse or Chopin Hall to help meet the needs of our neighbors. Of course, none of these efforts by themselves will fix our society or our world. But they do help to make visible those who are socially and politically and economically invisible much of the time. There's a word that summarizes today's text, at least as I read it, imperative. The English teachers among us just perked their ears up, probably. The term carries a couple of primary meanings. It names what is of vital importance, and it also refers to an authoritative command or instruction. In today's text from Isaiah, we can't escape the imperative in either sense of the term. The lawsuit brought by God details both what is of vital importance for God's people, and it issues a list of authoritative commands about how to mend the political, social, and spiritual fabric and how to accomplish God's purposes. Seen through the eyes of today's lesson from Isaiah, we see just how important to God is the pursuit of justice for the vulnerable. Without it, worship becomes hollow, a cynical mockery. Absent heeding God's imperative for justice, there is no way we can live fully before God and among our neighbors. God's summons is stinging in its clarity and arresting in its urgency. May we have the courage and good sense to follow. In fact, it's urgently imperative that we do. Amen.